For you know that we dealt with each of you as a father deals with his own children, encouraging, comforting, and urging you to live lives worthy of God, who calls you into his kingdom and glory. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this passage of Scripture this morning, and I pray, Father, that as we consider its meaning for us today, that we would see the way that Paul shared his life with these believers as an example for us to follow. And God, may we all realize this morning, recognize that we are here as one body, that we are here as your family, that we are brothers and sisters one to another. And I pray, God, that through what we discussed this morning, we would come to see how we ought to love one another more, and Father, specifically, in which ways we can love one another better. Help us, God, to realize that as we grow together closer as a family, as your family, as we love one another more and more, it will help us grow in our relationship with you, and that by serving and helping and loving one another, we grow closer to you, and that gives us the strength, Father, to continue this way of life that you've given to us. We thank you for Jesus. We offer this prayer in his name. Amen. So we've just come off of a great Ladies' Day. I know there were a lot of ladies here, and there were some really good talks, some really good segments. But I really want to focus in on the theme. I mentioned this to Fran when we were talking one time last week, that I didn't try to crib from the theme, but I've been preaching about relationships and family, and I thought the theme for our Ladies' Day was excellent, went right along with this, the idea of being leaning posts for one another, and looking at how we can come alongside one another and share in those relationships together. And by the way, we've got the talks from Ladies' Day recorded. If some of you want some of those, just let me know and I'll get a copy of them for you. But I want us to think about that theme this morning. And as I said in my prayer, we're all here this morning as one family. And sometimes it doesn't feel like that because we're just not accustomed to thinking that way. I think we're accustomed to talking about that way, and we're accustomed to having that concept understood. But I don't know if when it comes right down to it, if we really view one another as brothers and sisters the way that the Bible advocates that we ought to. And so I really think that as we look into this passage that I read this morning, the teaching of Paul and the way that he shared his life so deeply and so closely with these believers, that hopefully my prayer would be that we're encouraged and challenged ourselves in that regard to begin looking at one another more and more as brothers and sisters. The way we might even do that with our family that we're closest to. And not just to give lip service to the idea, but to very seriously consider what it means for us to view one another that way. And to ask ourselves the questions like, how would my relationship with so-and-so, because we all get that person in mind right now, what would my relationship with so-and-so be like if I viewed him or her as a brother or sister? How might I feel more inclined to pitch in to help if I viewed the people around me as brothers and sisters? How might I complain less about what I don't like if I knew that was my brother or my sister who was doing that work? Because when we start to apply these things specifically to our lives, rather than just dealing in the concepts, that's when the breakthroughs come. I think we all know that the church is the people. The church is not the building. It's not the furniture we have on stage. It's not the organization that we have. We all know that the church is the people. If you're anything like me, when you grew up in the Church of Christ, going to Sunday school every Sunday, it got drilled into you. The church is not the building. The church is the people. I see some of you recognize what I'm talking about there. And we all know that. And we know that even though we say things like, I'm going to church tomorrow. We use that word in the cultural, but we all know it's about the people. And yet sometimes we forget that that means that the people ought to be what's more important to us than the things or what happens when we're gathered with the people. When we forget that, that's when we find these kind of struggles coming in. And I know for myself, I understand that church is about the people. But for me, the times that I have the hardest time with that, And the times when I find myself struggling the most to understand the church that way correspond to the times that I'm being most selfish about my own desires or what it is that I want. Maybe it's that way for you too. When you stop and think about your experience with the church, and maybe it's not going the way you want it to. Maybe you feel like you're not getting what you deserve. You're not getting what you're owed. Maybe you feel like you're not even getting what you want. I think for me, that would be a time that we should step back and question ourselves a little bit and evaluate ourselves. And like I said last week, stop blaming other people and find a way to ask questions about, is this more about me? Is this more about my selfishness and what I want rather than something else? And so Paul tries to address that, I think, indirectly, or at least for our purposes, he addresses it when we can look really at what it is that he's saying. And what we see in his example is that God calls us as a family to be giving and sacrificial, but not only with time and resources, but with our own lives. And I think that's the difficult part for us sometimes, because we're all busy. We all have a lot going on. We all have different challenges. We all have different things that are happening in our lives. And sometimes we want to help. We just don't feel like we have the time to really give ourselves to another. So we give maybe a little bit of time, or we give some money, or we give in some other way. And those things are all good. But let's not fool ourselves that that's all we're called to give. That God desires us to give ourselves to one another. And that's difficult. That's challenging. It's easy for me to stand up here this morning and say that. But I want you to know I struggle with that. And I understand that what I'm asking you to consider this morning is very difficult. To think about what it means to sacrifice and give your life for another. And so we're going to look at what Paul says. Because as I tried to point out, we often, we look to things like money or objects or time as giving. But Paul's example that I read for us this morning was so much more than that. So much more than that. And that's what I want us to consider. When we see Paul's example in chapter 2 here in Thessalonians, I mean, we can look at some of what he's saying right here. Just chapter 2, verse 1. Our visit to you was not a failure. I mean, look how he's evaluating it. He would consider that he might fail among them. And the way that he might fail among them is not that maybe he failed to teach them, but that they might come away from their encounter with him believing that he doesn't care about them the way that he really does. That maybe he didn't communicate to them the depth of his care for them. And he would consider it to be a failure in that way. He talks about the hardships that were upon them when he was trying to preach. He says, we had previously suffered and been insulted in Philippi. They know this. But with the help of God, we dared to tell you his gospel in spite of strong opposition. So Paul goes into a place and it's not easy for him. He doesn't get to stand up and preach like I do on Sunday mornings where we kind of have a captive audience here. But for Paul, he goes in, he's talking to folks in the marketplace. Maybe he's going to their houses. Maybe he's going into the synagogues, but there's opposition to what he's trying to present to them. He's out there teaching them the gospel. He's out there trying to bring salvation into their midst. He's out there preaching the gospel in ways that will save people and bring them closer together. But there's opposition while he's doing it. It's not easy. But he presses on. He keeps going forward. He remains committed to that task. Not only because of his commitment to God, but as we see in this passage, because of his commitment to them. If we're committed only to God in our minds, it makes it easy for us to give up on people. Doesn't it? Well, they don't respect what I'm doing, so I'll just go over here and do something else for God. Because I'm all about God. But Paul's example shows us that the two come together. And God's work is that we would build people, that we would build one another up. And so we can't say that we're only going to be serving God and only pleasing to God while we're ignoring people or cast them aside because we didn't like what they did or we didn't like what they said or so on. That's not the example that we see in Paul. We see in Paul here that God calls us to unselfish living. unselfish giving to others. We see in Paul that Christianity is a relationship, first with God, but also with one another. And so we have to bring both of those things together. It's like when Jesus was asked, what is the greatest command? And his answer for that was, we have to love God with our entire beings, and we have to love our neighbors as ourselves. The greatest command for Jesus involved that dual command to love God completely and love your neighbor as yourself. That's what we see playing out in Paul. This is almost Paul's application of Jesus' teaching there. Because we see Paul loving God as he goes in among these believers to love them deeply and closely. So we can go back to a question that I asked last week that I think is still appropriate. When you think about your experience in the church, are you a giver or are you a taker? You know, I asked that last week because at the end of the day, I think that determines whether we are being selfish with the way we view one another, or whether we are being giving with the way we view one another according to the way that God has called us to live. If we look back maybe over the last 3 months, 6 months, 10 years, 30 years, I don't know, pick a time frame and ask yourself, as I've approached people, as I've tried to work with people, have I been looking to take all the time? Have I been looking to have my way with everything? Have I been looking to go along with something until they made a decision I didn't like and then I pulled my support on it? If so, that's taking. That's making it about you. Or have you been thinking about the family of God in a way that you've been giving? Have you sacrificed for another? Have you given time to help somebody? Have you maybe even given money to help somebody out? Have you looked at one another in terms of how you can serve one another instead of having them come serve you? I love that passage we were in 3 or 4 weeks ago when Jesus says, who's greater? Is it the one who sits at the table and gets served, or is it the one who serves the one who sits at the table and gets served? And the rhetorical answer is, it's the guy that sits at the table that gets served. In the world, that's the greater one. But Jesus says, I come among you as one who serves. And so we see that play out in Paul's example again here. He comes among them as one who serves. But how does he do that? I want to share 3 ways from this passage that Paul comes among them as one who serves. 3 ways that Paul prioritizes his relationship with them and how he gives an example to the church by way of himself to how we can all live in closer ways to one another. The first thing is in verse 7. I've got it written down in my notes as humility and assertiveness. Because Paul says, as apostles of Christ, we could have been a burden to you. And I think he means what he says there. As apostles, they had the right to come in and say, we're teaching, we're leading you towards God, help us out. You've got that obligation to take care of us. But where he could have been assertive, instead, he believed that it would better advance the gospel and his work in ministry among them to practice humility. And so he left assertiveness aside and approached them in humility. In fact, he describes exactly how he does that. He says, as apostles of Christ, we could have been a burden to you, but we were gentle among you. They could have come in with authority. They could have come in dictating how things were going to go, but he didn't do it. He says, we came instead, we came among you, and we were gentle. And so he left assertiveness behind in favor of humility. And then he took another step, and he says, we were motherly with you in terms of our care towards you. He says, we were gentle among you. Again in verse 7, like a mother caring for her little children. We loved you so much that we were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well, because you had become so dear to us. Paul did not go in as though he were preaching to a bunch of robots who were either going to accept it or not. He went in recognizing that the people he's working with are real people. They have needs, they have issues, they have hurts, they have fears, they have joys. And he went in, saw everybody as individuals, and he worked with them where they were at to provide care for them that would lead them towards the gospel. But at the same time, he was fatherly in his guidance, he says. So when we drop down to verse 10, he says, "You are witnesses, and so is God, of how holy, righteous, and blameless we were among you who believe." Paul says, we came with integrity. We didn't show up trying to lead one way, trying to claim to be one thing so that we could backdoor some extra help from you guys that we didn't really deserve. He says, we had integrity among you. The picture we see of Paul, this is all he did. He came to that group, he got to know them, he did whatever it was going to take to love them and teach them the gospel. And now he says in verse 11, "For you know that we dealt with each of you as a father deals with his own children, encouraging, comforting, and urging you to live lives worthy of God." Paul did everything that a good father would do. Coaching them, building them up, teaching them, guiding them, moving them forward in a positive and constructive way. This is how Paul says he was among them. Humble, caring, and guiding. Those are three values we can practice today in our relationships with one another. Humility, that when we go in, maybe we've got something to teach one another, but it's not about us. It's not about, in a relationship with one another, how much can I impart to you so that you come out of it further ahead because I blessed you with my relationship in your life. That's not what we're after. That's not what Paul's advocating. Paul's saying, know your place. Paul's saying, know what you're about. Know what you're called to in the gospel. We are not called to be assertive over one another. We're called to be humble with one another, to enter into one another's lives in caring ways that will guide somebody forward. Notice in this case, Paul's teaching the gospel to them. This is first contact stuff he's talking about. This he's not talking about on my 15th visit to you, I could finally loosen up and just have a good time. He's talking about when I came among you to teach you the gospel, I cared for you, and I was humble among you, and I guided you forward. I mean, look at what he says in verse 8. "We loved you so much that we were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well, because you had become so dear to us." What a statement of affirmation and love from Paul's own writing to them. And I wonder, would we say something like that about one another? Do we have the humility about ourselves, the caring nature for one another, the desire to guide people forward, not according to our own desires, but according to the will of God and the gospel? Do we have the lack of ego, the lack of pride, the lack of arrogance, the lack of selfishness to look at one another and say, they have become so dear to me that I desired nothing more than to share my life with that person? Because I really think that's what Paul's getting at. That's why I said 1st and 2nd Thessalonians are great books. Because that's all it's about. That's all Paul's writing about in these letters. Notice, if you know anything about these letters, he's not writing to correct some kind of major issue that they were having. They had a couple. He had to encourage them about what happens when folks die, because they were concerned about what would happen to those among them that died while they were in the Lord. So he wrote to encourage them. God's got a plan for that. But he's not writing to address any kind of serious issues among them. He's writing to them to build them up, to encourage them, because he loves them. He had no agenda among them other than to build them up. So how can we do this today? I think we should. I think this is the agenda that we ought to take. It's not the only agenda, of course, but, you know, as we're looking at this, what greater commitment could we make within the family of God at Otisville than to say, I want to love each one here in a way that I will lay down my own agenda for them, love them more, care for them, and guide them forward in humility. Wouldn't that be great? So where do we start? We start here. We start with the relationships that we currently have. Maybe you've got someone in mind right now, or maybe you've got a group of people in mind, whatever the case may be. Examine that relationship. And ask yourself, how am I approaching that? Am I approaching it from a place of assertiveness, a place of authority, a place of me looking down on them? I don't mean that that we're being vindictive about that, but sometimes we do take on relationships because we feel as though we have something to impart to another person. But that's always going to get in the way of our care for them, because we're always going to feel like we think we know best. We think we know what's best for them, rather than caring with them as they really are. So in those relationships, can you simply care for those people as they really are? That's the start. That's the first start. But then I think we can think about, how can I love them better? And again, I'm not talking about establishing an agenda, making a plan about how am I going to mentor this person, but simply asking, how can I love that person better? How can I give myself more to this person or that group, whatever the case may be, in a way that loves them more? And how can I maintain humility in all of this to make sure that I keep this about them and not about me? I think that's where we're at this morning. I think those are the questions we need to ask. I know some of you were here yesterday and heard some lessons along those lines from the talks that some of our ladies gave. I know that if we're going to move forward as a church, if we're going to be a witness in this area for the Lord, if we're going to be that light shining on a hill for the Lord, if we're going to be the salt of the earth in Otisville and the surrounding area, it's going to be on the basis of our bond with one another. The way that we love one another. The way that we care for one another. The way that we guide one another forward in humility. If we think about it, that might be all that we need. It might be all we need. We might be able to let go of everything else and simply do the will of God. And if we find ourselves in that place, if we find ourselves letting go, giving up our agendas, our issues, our pride, whatever else, and simply taking on that mission of loving one another, so much so that the only thing we care about is building them up in the faith, why would we want anything else? That's all we need. If you're here this morning and need to respond to the message, you know, we know what the gospel is, that God in his great wisdom recognized that we were going to fall short of attaining our way to him. And so God solved that problem. Before any of us ever existed, we were in his mind, but before any of us ever existed, God solved that problem. He said, I'm sending my son who's going to die for them so that they can come to me. And we take advantage of that gift of God in baptism, when we say goodbye to an old way of life and hello to a new way of life. We die to that old self in the water. We're raised into a new life in Christ. If there's anybody here that needs to take that journey this morning, please let us know by coming forward as we stand and sing.